Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here flying solo to give you kind of what's going on, a pulse of the nerdverse, if you will. Things that are catching my eye, just to fill you in on, you know, the normal geeky nonsense. Just to fear me. I'm going to talk. No, just to fill your ear holes with some of the latest, greatest in nerd culture. Stuff I find interesting. Stuff that made me laugh, which I'll get to in just a quick second. Before that, let's introduce our sponsor, who is Suzy Q's, who will be on the show next week. We finally got our schedules to line up properly to go and sit down with the master blacksmith that Suzy is, and we are going to find out everything that breathes life into Suzy Q's creations. Go to SuzyQ's.com. Go to her Facebook page. Go to her Instagram. All of her amazing and delicate, not delicate, but intricate work is on display. Pick something out nice for the one you love. Pick out something nice for yourself. Shit. Treat yourself. Where's Red when I need her? Son of a bitch. What's going on? So, we have lots of stuff to talk about. Well, actually, not that lot. I figured with the end of WandaVision, I'll give you my final take on WandaVision. We'll get updated on the latest issue of Flash, the heartbreaking season premiere. Oh, my God. Get kind of a depth chart, if you will, of The Walking Dead. First two episodes are out and very interesting, I have to say. I like the premise, I like the idea, and we'll get to it. In addition to some other stuff, Lois and Lane and Clark, what's happening on that show. There isn't so much in the movie world with the new Disney film. I haven't seen it yet with The Dragons, The Last Dragon, which looks very, very cool. I want to see it, but I ain't paying. Nope. I already pay for Disney Plus. I'm not going to give you an additional $30, Disney, to watch a movie and pray that you never take it away from me. It just, nope. I might go to the theater to see it. We'll see. But off to the races. The one thing that did catch my eye and made me laugh. So if you are very unaware, and I was, NECA took over the Chia Pet brand. They're a collectibles company, and they did this back in 2018. And immediately they have done well. As soon as they took over, they really went all out. I mean, just completely nutsoid. They've done everything from Star Wars. I even think that there's a Weird Al Yankovic out there. I know there's a Baby Yoda Chia Pet, but now they have decided to add to their ranks David Hasselhoff. That's right, the Hoff! In his illustrious Knight Rider garb can now be your desk ornate item. It is hilarious. So the Hoff is available for $19.99, and it's going to be released sometime around April. They haven't said where, but I'm sure it's going to be just about everywhere. Amazon, I'm sure you could, if you scoured it, they're probably even taking pre-orders right now. But I just had to laugh that, you know, I even Bob Ross made sense to me as a Chia Pet, her Chia head, and now you get the Hoff. I mean, and when you look at the images, if you want to go out there and check it out, because it really did just crack me up, because it really just reeks of 80s machismo. And it just cracked me up so hard. It probably made me laugh harder than it really should have, because it's just a Chia Pet. But they've just got the dopiest grin on him. And it looks dead ringer for him. But it's just the green foliage growing on his head just cracks me up. So there you have it. If you collect Chia Pets, Chia Heads, this is the one for you, I guess. I don't know if you're a Knight Rider fan. Sure. But it's just one of those things that I had to stop and just scratch my head and go, huh? Okay, sure. Oh, what else is going on? So let's dive in, shall we? I'm sure not everyone has caught up to WandaVision. The final episode aired, and it was everything that Marvel has promised us and that we are accustomed to when it comes to stories, overarching stories, family story. I mean, just the whole thing came together in a pretty bow, and I couldn't have been happier. The whole premise, I mean, even the story itself followed relatively closely to the comics, and there are some key questions, of course, that come out of this, like, where does the White Vision go, and what happens to the kids? Now, there's a lot of speculation, and people are already throwing out their hypothesis, and I do have to admit, I'm one of those people, because I get paid to do that, but my thought, and I know there were a couple misses, but I was closer than I thought I was going to be on a couple of ideas and a couple of theories. Now, the theory about Mephisto could still hold some water, because we still have Scratch. And Scratch is the familiar for the witch, Agatha. But depending upon what story that they're going off of, it can be Mephisto trapped in the familiar form. And with everything going on and how the story ends, there's a good chance Mephisto's out running around, because we don't know what happened to the little bunny Fufu. For all we know, he's running through the forest, and he's just doing bunny-like things. And all of a sudden, the magic that's imprisoning him disappears, and he's back to being who he was. So there's a good potential that Scratch could still evolve past his little hopping years and become whoever he's supposed to, because it really depends if they pull it from the comics. It really does. Because also, the kids who have in the comic parts of Mephisto in them, and it really gets complicated and really convoluted, but there are some theories that maybe we will see the kids again. And I'm not opposed to that. The kids were kind of fun and lightened the whole mood and made for a very impressive dynamic. So with that said, who knows how that turns out? The major question, of course, is at the end where Wanda shuttles off to. The thought that I had immediately was, oh, look, it's the Hulk's cabin from the end of the Incredible Hulk film, where Banner goes to, you know, kind of find himself, learn to be angry all the time, or it's just really reminiscent of the Hulk ending and Edward Norton sitting there, you know, meditating and, you know, opening up with the green eyes. Totally just reeks of that scene. However, as I sat and I rewinded a couple of times just to see exactly what I was seeing, because there's obviously, you know, some kind of illusion going on. And in the back room, you've got, you know, Wanda doing Wanda-y things. And it's obvious she ended up with the Darkholm, which is kind of cool. But I'm thinking she's in Wondergore. And it just kind of how the mountain setting and everything, and you get these visuals when you're reading the comics of, like, what these lands look like. And I honestly, for, like, a brief second, like, Is she in Wondergore? Could she have found her way there? There's a good possibility. And it does open the door to the High Evolutionary, which ties directly into her history with the comics. And there's that huge potential because I really, my hope is we do get the High Evolutionary as a villain. Because they've always kind of like downplayed him. And I think he could be so much more impressive and powerful than we see him depicted in like other cartoons and stuff like that. Even in the comics, I mean, he's a force, but he's always kind of like, I don't know, misunderstood, or he's just on the wrong side of the story. And I really think that he does hold potential to be a great villain. It's all in all there, but it's a question of what direction Marvel is going to go, what direction Disney's going to go. And who knows? Maybe this was just some random cabin stuck in the woods and it just happened to look like the Hulk's. Or it could just be simply a nod. Thank you for watching. Bye-bye. So, in the end, what do I think? I think it's a hit. It really drove home some of the narrative and the fallout from Infinity War and just dealing with loss. I mean, because poor Scarlet Witch has just basically lost her home, lost her brother, lost her lover, lost her kids, even though she never had kids. And it really worked well. So I'm happy with the result. I'm happy with the story. And the only thing I'm upset about is we didn't get enough. I want Coulson, because I really think with the Darkholm showing up here, it really takes away from what they were doing in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series, because they did reference and talk about the Darkholm in the Ghost Rider season that they had going on. So with them bringing it up here, I don't know if they're kind of tossing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. out the window and saying, okay, that didn't happen, or what? I don't know. And that leaves me scratching my head. So I want Coulson back, and with, you know, the Darkholm kind of now in play, it really opens the door to the metaphysical and the mystic and all of that sorcery nonsense, the witches, which I'm really excited to see everything happen with, you know, all of this, because I realized I was having another conversation on another podcast, which you'll hear later this week, but I'll bring it up now, of just that since we're out of order, Spider-Man wasn't supposed to be first or Journey Home was out of order or something like that. So J.D. Smooth was, you know, referencing about witches and all of that. So I do believe that there's a direct tie to the Scarlet Witch story and the Vision, because, you know, it being in Jersey and then being in New York, just a bridge right away. I think that there was kind of a nod to the Scarlet Witch and that story and everything that was going on. So it's kind of cool that they're still integrating the stories and moving forward with the bigger universe. So what's in store next? That's a great question. Next up, in a couple of weeks, we do get Falcon and the Snowman. And I don't know how I feel about that. Everything kind of in this screams buddy cop gone, you know, no one's the alpha. I don't know. I mean, it really just, we were all talking about this. It just reeks of Lethal Weapon. And that's great. I love Lethal Weapon. And I talked about that just a couple weeks ago. And it really does scream like the buddy cop kind of scenario, them working together. And maybe this is where this is going to go for these two characters. But obviously, out of this, Winter Soldier, you know, is I think, the key character, or at least the driving character for this storyline, I would think. And Falcon is still kind of the sidekick. I'm not really impressed with either character, if I'm 100% honest with you, and that is just my personal opinion. I do think that the characters that were represented in the films were great. I loved Winter Soldier as a villain, and his redemption story that I'm sure we're going to get in this series will be one that pulls on the heartstrings, same as we had with WandaVision. And maybe at some point we'll even see Falcon just kind of come into his own and try and get out of the shadow of everybody else. But will it work? And that's kind of, I don't know. They've got a big set of shoes to fill after WandaVision, let's face it, because everyone wasn't sure what to think of this show, and it really did take us on a journey, an emotional journey through the eyes of a little girl, and we assimilated it, and we can associate with it, and we can all of us can sit back and remember the sitcom times. You know, we all remember The Cosby Show, we all remember Family Ties, Cheers, all of it. And just to see that all kind of just work itself through the decades as it did in a matter of, you know, episodes, and, you know, Wanda trying to deal with her loss. It was poetic. It really was. And we do get quite the shock at the end. So, like I said, no spoilers, because I know everyone hasn't caught up. Thank you. Proper English. And I'm if you want to talk about this or share any like theories or speculations that you may have, I'm completely open to any and all conversations on this. Just if I even want to reference some of the comic book stuff or anything, shoot me a direct message or in the comments below, because I'm very curious to see what, because I guess this is done and this story continues in Doctor Strange. But Falcon and the Snowman, I'm hesitant, but it could be better than what I'm giving it credit for. Because let's face it, the Winter Soldier, Captain America 2 was probably one of the best Marvel movies, without a doubt. I mean, that was spy film, action, superheroes. I mean, you couldn't have asked for anything. It was a great spy film. And it's hard to beat. Now, if they follow that formula, and if they keep that kind of approach, there could be something there. And we're getting Baron Zemo, which is kind of pretty spectacular, I have to admit. But will it work? How will it work? What does this picture look like? Because I honestly think, of the three series that we're about to get, I think this one's going to be, Falcon and the Snowman is probably going to be the least liked, because you got Loki, and Hiddlestad is just a freaking gem. That guy's going to carry that series no matter what. And with his charm and his approach to Loki, I mean, it's going to be hard pressed to beat that show. It really is. But, and I think it might actually even do better than WandaVision, from the standpoint of character and story and everything that we're going to see. So we'll see. We only got a couple of weeks. I like that Marvel's got this all stacked up and ready to go. 10 stacked high, ready to fly. And yeah. So if you want to carry on this conversation offline, by all means, please shoot me a message. Give me a, pardon me, a direct tie or whatever it takes, because I'm all about talking about this show. And in other TV news, talk about, so Walking Dead has started up again, and we're two episodes in, and I like it already more than I've liked the last couple of seasons put together. Why? Because they're on the run. Oh my God. So we've got issues, of course, because the Whisperers basically just kicked everybody's ass, and everyone comes home that survived the war to a smoldering mound that is Alexandria, and it is perfect. This is what I envision The Walking Dead to kind of be like, where, you know, it's not exactly secure and things could fall apart at any given time, and it's great. I really, really, really love this approach. This is what I've been waiting for quite a few seasons now. And I think this is the better approach when you consider the show. especially how these characters are built and designed. Because, of course, everyone wants the happy, you know, everyone living in the town, doing well, kumbaya and all that nonsense. But you got Daryl, who's like the supreme loner. You got Carol, who's just like a freaking mass murdering ninja if she needs to be. So it only made sense that we would hopefully get back to this kind of setting. So the first episode, albeit, was good, but, you know, it's just kind of reestablishing everything that's going on, getting you acclimated to the world, since it seems like it has been forever since we have sat down with these characters and kind of been involved in this world. And it does feel like it has been forever with everything that happened with Rona and that nonsense and production delays and just kind of how the last season went. I was a little disjointed and kind of, I wouldn't say put off, but definitely, you know, just not bought in. And it's obvious that they have reevaluated everything, and especially with them going into the last season, because this is still falling under season 10. It's kind of like little cliff notes to what's gone on and what's happened, and it's needed. It really is. And this is the element that I miss the most about The Walking Dead. It's these flashbacks and these filler moments that define the characters, and we get to see a little bit more of what's going on. Of course, the conflict between Negan and Maggie was very, very downplayed, and I kind of am okay with it. To answer your question, I was expecting her to just go rabid dog, jump at Negan, and rip his eyes out of his head. Of course, she got, her husband was killed by this guy. And, of course, there is direct reference to the kid asking, you know, did the man that killed Daddy get what he deserved? And it's like, okay. So, I mean, they are definitely addressing it, and I'm curious to see the end result, because we know it's just simmering under the surface as everyone tries to make nice as they rebuild a wall so they have somewhere to stay. So what does that mean for these two? That's a very good question, and we don't get an answer yet. I know it's coming, though. This week's episode, however, was even better, because we're getting more answers to the time gap from Rick getting blown up and to now. So Daryl and Carol go on this odd little date and go hunting together, and it really goes dark quick for them, and the strain of their relationship and how Carol has kind of evolved, and Daryl not getting it, but, you know, accepting his friend for who she is, but frustrated nonetheless. We also get a great look at Daryl's life when he was not in the community, when he's out looking for Rick, and those 5 years of him hunting down leads, trying to find him, seeing, you know, just trying to even just find a body to see if Rick, you know, turned or is still out there or what the deal is. And we get some extremely entertaining and character building moments for Daryl that I think is needed and is well earned. I mean, Daryl is at this point the staple for the show, and it does expand a lot on the value that Daryl had for the relationship with him and Rick. We also get to find out the backstory of Dog, which I thought was perfect, and it really, this episode, if anything, probably is I wouldn't want to say one of the best, but it's been one of the better ones in a very long time. And just from the pure storytelling and character development standpoint that they go through, there's enough that's there that you're like, "Oh." And I really dug it, but it does raise a lot of questions. Like, Where did she go? Why was dog left behind? And what was, you know, what was going on? So there's some questions, which is perfect. They're kind of, you know, just peppering it out there for the fans. And I think this is perfect. This is exactly what the fans needed when it comes to The Walking Dead. And I couldn't have been happier. We'll see what happens when we finally get to the Negan chapter of this ongoing update. We'll see. That's the big one. Everyone's looking forward to that. And I can't blame you. So, I mean, all of this stuff right now, when you're looking at it, none of this happened in the comics. I mean, we're so far off the comic trail that it's rather humorous. I the only thing that we're really close, kind of close on the comics, is Princess and the guy showing up in the funny Stormtrooper armor at the end of last quarter, I guess, quarter season 10B, I guess is what they're calling it. And yeah, Princess is probably as close to the comics as we're going to get, and because we're so far off otherwise that it just kind of defeats the purpose. But definitely not bad so far, especially just to jump in. And if you walked away from The Walking Dead, like a lot of us have, and if you're one of them, just kind of pick up. This is a decent one. And the one coming up, this next week's episode looks really great with Gabriel, and I can't remember the dude with no hand. I want to call him Andrew, but I think that's wrong. And yeah, it looks really good. So anyway, yeah, see, that's how I'm invested in the characters I am. I can't even remember their names anymore. But, you know, that's just me. Also in television news, The CW returns with The Flash on Tuesday, last Tuesday. We got episode 2 coming up tonight. And we come back to a very fractured story, a very broken story, in my opinion, because of Corona and everything that's gone on, the developments off screen with characters and people's personal lives, with direct conflict to direct conflict with the world and with people, and rightfully so. So the landscaping is completely different. We have no Flash is the last man standing, basically, in this story, and how they approach this was a tearjerker, because of all the characters that I have come to love and really enjoy, it's Wells. I like the actor that plays him. I like all the different variations of Wells, the Council of Wells, everything about that character and that creation. I've enjoyed from the start, especially when you're dealing with, like, you know, the speedsters, Reverse Flash, all of it. And to have the ending that we got for that character arc and for that storyline was just absolutely, oh, it was a shot to the gut, and it hurt. It was a great story. It was really, really good. And I just, there's nobody left on Team Flash, because everybody basically is gone, and it really is like, okay, so it's just the Flash. And I guess that's fine. I mean, he's a speedster. I mean, help is always nice, but face it, he's the Flash. He doesn't really need anybody. Really? Come on. It's the Flash. So, the whole premise of everything and getting his speed back and Mirror Master and that whole world, I'm excited to see how they develop this story and how they move forward with the much thinned out team and the characters that we got in play right now. So it's any man's guess of where it's going, but again, probably the best CW show that they have is Flash, in my opinion. Black Lightning is interesting, and it's driven, I'll give you that, and there's some stuff going on, but again, I'm not as bought into Black Lightning as I am Flash, and absolutely absolutely worth watching. So just to see what happens. And then, of course, now also Tuesday night is Superman and Lois. And I am really on board. I know what I've said. Superman, not my favorite. And I repeat that to this day. But, you know, there's a saying, there are no bad characters, they're just bad stories. And Superman has probably suffered the most of a certain depiction or a certain look for a lot of his comic book career. And it's spilled over into all the other forms of media, from video games to cartoons to just about any depiction of the character that we see. It wasn't until recently that, you know, Superman killed somebody. And whether, you know, love, hate, or whatever, Zod deserved to die? No. But it isn't until recently that we start seeing stories that kind of explore the other side of Superman. And this Superman and Lois definitely delivers on that approach. Superman having kids, you know, going back to the farm, trying to understand the world, in addition to getting a big baddie that is a Luther. And I'm very intrigued by the approach. I'm very intrigued by the character, and I know exactly where it's going, and I don't care. I want to see it. I'm in. But this really, I think, kind of goes with the whole buy-in for the new approach. Stargirl broke the mold, and the success and everyone's response to that show, I think, is helping stoke the fire for Superman as far as the production team and everyone that they're doing, because they're doing kind of a better approach. It's no longer, you know, like I've said, emotions in hallways, emotions in, you know, stairwells and all that nonsense. It's quality kind of character building that makes sense, instead of just kind of a whole lot of fluff, blow some shit up, and then some more fluff. There really is kind of a plot, a decent story. And we get some small resolutions, and it just leads to more questions. And Stargirl was great at delivering that. I can't praise that show enough for what it accomplished and what it didn't do that I was expecting it to do. And it may change. It may go back to the, you know, Princess Diary vampire nonsense that the CW has thrived on for the last 10 plus years, but for now, I'm pleased with it. You have my nod of acknowledgement. But if they keep with this trend, it really could open the doors up to some incredible storytelling and some wonderful episodes. Because the last two for Superman and Lois have been very, very compelling. And I've got theories, of course, now, watching two episodes. Yeah, because, you know, I got nothing better to do but sit and develop theories that kind of make sense with the powers, because I think we're dealing with the Wonder Twins. That they have to be in close proximity for their powers to work. They make a full battery. So my theory is somehow, some way, they're linked, and unless they're, like, you know, touching, like North Star and, God, what was North Star's sister's name? Out of the Marvel comics. I can't remember. Anyway, they have to be in close proximity or touching for their powers to work. And that is kind of the key element for this story, I think. And it kind of plays into the whole family, the togetherness, the working on things together that they're trying to develop and send home for the message for the show. So we'll see. I might be wrong. I might be right. It'll be fun to see how this develops. They are going to go on a premature hiatus due to COVID and all of that nonsense, which makes sense that they would replace their time slot with Supergirl. And that's fine. I mean, it's just like, okay, so we're taking a break sooner than normal. Okay. I'm not surprised by that. We get Supergirl back. She's sporting same costume. Hair is a little different, but we will see what we get with Supergirl. I think we have a couple more episodes of Superman left before they take their break, and then we get Supergirl, and I guess most of her stuff is done. We'll see. That's the other part about this. I'm kind of annoyed that they haven't brought Supergirl in to Superman and Lois. And it really kind of, I'm trying to figure out, because it really has to be after Crisis. So they're in the same world. So Martha dies, and Supergirl is not at the funeral. So I find that kind of annoying. And there's been kind of like references. I know Flash made a reference this week about Clark and Superman, but there really hasn't been. I honestly thought that we would at least get kind of, I don't know, a handoff or an acknowledgement or something along the lines of Supergirl and Superman talking or together or something like that. And we haven't gotten it. And I'm a little annoyed by that. And maybe it's just because Supergirl is going away. I know we're not going to get any of the major crossover events that we normally do every year. That has definitely been squashed by the CW. And it's just not going to happen, which is kind of sad because I wanted to see, originally, it was supposed to be Batwoman and Supergirl, which I think would have been spectacular. Those two chemistry that you just immediately saw during Crisis was perfect, and I wanted to see that explored some more just to do World's Finest. But alas, in a perfect world, that's not going to happen. Sad. So we'll see where this all goes. Hopefully Supergirl makes an appearance in Lois and Superman before the end. I mean, they at least owe her that much. So what else has caught my eye this week? Well, one of the things that, to go with the Marvel kind of side of things, I'm upset, no Coulson, but hopefully they'll fix that and we'll get that on the right track. There was, and I've talked about this in the past, there is a live action, Powerpuff Girls that is going to happen, and it's going to be on the CW, and I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if we need a live action Powerpuff Girls. I don't think there's anything wrong with the Cartoon Network's version, and I think it should just kind of stay. So, in the vein of the CW and all of their infinite wisdom, they have now added Chloe Bennett as one of the Powerpuff Girls. So they've rounded them out. We've got Chloe Bennett, Dove Cameron, and Yana Peralt as Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup. It's basically everybody from the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that I can see, because I know, I know Peralt was out. Is Peralt out of one of the? There's no Dove. Dove Cameron is out of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So they're very, very interesting descriptions on what they're going to do. They've got character synopsises posted, and I'm just scratching my head looking at this, because I mean it reads exactly like the cartoon as far as their characterization and everything, but I don't know if we need grown-up, over-sexualized versions of the Powerpuff Girls. And if it's live action, what are you going to do about Mojo Jojo? Come on! Mojo Jojo is probably the best character out of the Powerpuff Girls, at least my favorite, and he's a bitch to find in a statue, I'll tell you that. I've tried looking for him a few times, and it has been extremely difficult. I was able to find Buttercup a few years ago, and that took a lot of work and a couple of favors to call in just to get that statue wrangled in, but that was a gift. So, but the Mojo Jojo one out of that set is very difficult to find, and I want it. But how do you do a live action Mojo Jojo? Alan Tudyk cannot do everything, okay? I mean, he's like the only one that I could see just crazy enough to pull off an angry live-action man-monkey? Monkey-man? I don't know. I'm sure that the CW has this already thought out. I don't know. It just makes my skin crawl. It really does, because they're cute little girls, and now we've got, like, full-grown women? So have we already gone, like, through the progression of, like, the early years of the Powerpuff Girls, and now they're adults, and this is what it's like to be a grown-up superhero that made in a laboratory? I don't know. I mean, I know Chloe has been talked about in multiple circles to be, Quake, in upcoming Marvel films and series and all of that. So I don't know how that plays into this. If it does, I'm sure, you know, the CW would let her go and film her other stuff, I guess. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that's still open and up in the air on this, but since they just now signed Chloe as the third Powerpuff, so I don't even know if they've got, like, scripts in all of that. So who knows? We'll see. I don't know. And I guess the other character that they could focus on is him. And I'm trying to remember what him looks like. Sorry, Mojo Jojo, just... No, you can't... Even the name! It's just fun to say. Mojo Jojo. Or is that just me? Moving along to other interesting news. And movie news... Disney's live-action Pinocchio, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is cast as Jiminy Cricket, opposite of Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks, of course, is playing Geppetto, and this might be kind of fun, actually, in my opinion. Robert Zemeckis is directing the live-action film, and I'm in, because I just... Pinocchio is kind of like one of those stories. There's a couple of them in my childhood, my past, that I really that are my favorite. Pinocchio is one of them. The Fox version of Robin Hood, which my dad had that actually on a reel to reel that we would watch. We'd set up the screen, set up the reel to reel, and watch the film. It was so good, but. Seeing this kind of come to life in a live action film, and even just to see Tom Hanks play Geppetto, I'm in on this. Even Jungle Book, which is my other one, I'm still kind of partial to the one where Christopher Walken is King Louis, but that one just went through so many remakes so quickly that I just it hurt my feel bads. So. I can see Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Jiminy Cricket. I can see him as a small little cricket. No pictures, no stills, no nothing on this yet. So I don't know if they're just going to digitize Joseph Gordon-Levitt, or if they're actually going to animate a cricket, or what they're going to do on this. But at least now we know kind of what's going on, and... we'll see. Keegan-Michael Key from Key and Peele is going to be voicing Honest John, and Lorraine Bracco will be giving her voice to Sophia the Seagull. And yeah, I mean, there's some great names associated with this. So we'll just have to wait and see, because I don't know if... I know Disney's pushing this live-action stuff, and some of it's been really good, and some of it's been really bad. So, because I still can't get the taste of Aladdin out of my mouth, and that was just, yeah, that was unforgivable. So bad. Anyway, I'll keep you up to date on that story as it develops for sure, just because I absolutely love Pinocchio. I think there's so many ways that they can go with that story. And the kids being turned into donkeys, and I'm in. I can't wait. And the whale? Are you kidding? Get a whole whale. Tom Hanks at sea again. If they don't take the opportunity to make a Wilson joke, I'm gonna be pissed. Just saying. It's personal opinion. Maybe it's too easy. Yeah, that's it. What else is going on? Oh, if you guys are not following us on our Facebook page, please do. Hit the like and subscribe on our YouTube channel so you can stay up to date with everything that's going on. Like our Munch Madness right now, we have our annual cereal throwdown, if you will, as the top cereals buy for the ever coveted Golden Bowl Award. Cinnamon Toast Crunch has been the reigning champion, and it's really hard to usurp that particular. Wendell is just, he's a force. He's a breakfast force, I'll tell you. So this week, this year, it's kind of like the apocalyptic cereal bowl, if you will, Munch Madness. The shelves are a little more picked through than you normally would, so you're getting the B teams that you normally don't see. So we read meticulously, figured out the best matchups that would work for this year's lineup, and it's boxes and types that we've talked about in the past, but it just didn't work with the setup or the setting and everything. So this year it actually worked out very well, and voting is already live. Round one is complete. We're on to round two. So get your vote in. Voting ends on Sunday, and then the new round begins on Mondays. So cast your votes. Let us know. Send us a message. I'll be curious to see how it turns out. I haven't looked at the results yet today. So, yeah, there you go. What else is going on? And, there was an announcement that San Diego Comic-Con is going virtual again this year. The con has decided to basically not set up again. And maybe that's just because it's too soon. Maybe because it's in California, they're trying to be responsible. There's a lot of, I mean, that's the big one. So of course, NDK here in Colorado has decided that they are going to go, but I don't know. That could change, and it does leave the question about Dragon Con, which the that would also be at the end of summer, and I don't know if they're going to try and do this year or not. So as we start to get closer into con season and more events, I know we have the All Seas Fan Expo that will be happening in June. We also have Colorado Festival of Horror that yours truly is a part of. It's still taking place, and the ever so wonderful Rocky Mountain Con at the end of the year, just to name a few. I don't know what's going on with Colorado Springs Comic Con just yet. They have been naming celebrities and people that will be appearing, but I don't know. Again, so early that they could change their minds. They could say no. I don't know. So I will keep an eye on it for you and keep you apprised of the situation. And let's see what else. Oh, and a final bit of news, something that just kind of caught my eye. And this happened kind of back in 2019. There was a company called Gateway Foundation, which had released plans for a cruise-style ship hotel to float above the Earth's atmosphere. They called it the Von Braun Station. The futuristic concept comprised of 24 modules connected by elevator shafts, make up a rotating wheel orbiting the Earth, and was scheduled to be fully operational by 2027. Now, fast forward to today. The name of the station has changed. It's now Voyager Station, and is set to be built in Orbital Assembly Corporation and new construction company run by the former pilot John Binkow, who also heads up the Gateway Foundation. He was in a recent interview with CNN, and he explained he had some delays with the COVID, but construction of the space hotel is expected to begin in 2026. And basically, you'd be able to be in space by 2027 and book a room. I can only imagine the cost to get up there. There are no indications as far as how much this is going to be, and I'm sure everybody's going to be clamoring to be the first people to stay in space. I see a disaster film coming. I'm all for forward technology. Of course, Ben Cao stated in the interview that the golden age of space travel is coming quickly, faster than anyone anticipates. And he might be right. This could be where the world is headed and what's basically gonna be tomorrow's tomorrow, and it's great. I just want the technology to work and not get my ass sucked out into the vacuum of space. That's all. So I'd be curious to see how this breaks down. We can't even get people to, you know, stay on the moon, and I would look there before putting a hotel in orbit of the Earth. So, but make your reservations now, because I'm sure they're going to fill up fast. And, you know, I know everyone's anxious just to get out of the house after the Rona. And yeah, so there you go. That kind of wraps up this week's tidbits. There's not a whole lot else going on that I absolutely saw, but doesn't mean that there's other stuff out there that you wouldn't like for me to investigate, to discuss, or otherwise go over. So if you have any comments, questions, please put them in the fields below. Like I said, thank you for listening. Thank you for liking and share as much as you can. In the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.